it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello and welcome to the Everything is Black and White podcast. It's time for episode 11 of Get in the Bin with me, Andrew Musgravand.
And me, Sam Mulliner. Hello.
You well? You good?
I am good. I'm in good form. I'm nervously awaiting the results of last week's poll to see if I've made it 3 out of 3 with the power of the people. But all good. The big question is on everyone's lips this week, though, is have we got an update about the award night?
We haven't yet. I'm still waiting for an update. So as soon as I hear an update, you will get an update.
What's the date of the award night?
It's sometime in June. I don't want to tell you, and then you say to your better half, we can't go on holiday that week because I'm going down to London for an awards do, and then it doesn't happen. So I'm not going to give you the date.
June is only like 4 or 5 weeks away.
I know. But when I get an update, you will get an update, Samuel. Would you like the all-important update, though, as you mentioned there on the poll?
Yes, please.
Yeah, I'm giving up on our origins because I just think they're just like going against me, quite frankly. You did win. 80% of people voted in favour of getting scapegoats in the bin as opposed to inconsistent at a time.
Yeah, this was the one I was most confident about, I'm not gonna lie. I thought you'd done better than what you actually had. On reflection, I think it was only ever gonna go one way, but thank you to everyone who voted the correct
I think
way.
I was passionate with my argument, but maybe I'm the only one as passionate about that subject.
Your argument was too diffuse. It was, the added time. Oh, actually, I don't mind the added time, but I want a report.
Whoa. So I haven't mentioned this, and I didn't text you, and I would have usually done, but I thought, you know what, right? I'm going to let him sit there and think he was right and think he was correct, because at about...
Is this transparency,
guys? And if you go back and listen to the full episode, which I have done, and I always do just to check the quality spot on, and it always is, ladies and gents, I mentioned the word transparency in my first round of arguments. And you're sitting there at 15, 20 minutes saying, you never mentioned transparency until I mentioned it. Well, I did. So get off your high horse.
Okay, fair enough. Apart from the wonderful impression of me that you just did there. I humbly apologise, but you know we got the right result in the end.
Is this another? Were you wearing this Newcastle United jacket last time, or was this third?
I'm pretty sure I've wore this before, but it is new. Yes.
Goodness me! You're making the most of this Castor end of line deal.
I'm gonna have no money left for Adidas.
I was going to say, you're going to need it, because if the kits are as good as they appear to be, the leaked ones, then I think everyone's going to be buying them up. Very excited to see how these look when they do come out in what will be less than a month's time, won't it? So, or just 6 weeks away, actually.
Yeah, June the 7th.
Just before the Blade and Rings. Shall we get on with today's show?
Yes, please.
Would you like to go first?
Okay. So you don't know what mine is yet, do you? So mine this week, my item to get in the bin is forced stadium atmospheres.
Ooh, hello. So, okay.
As a person, look, I'm not gonna sit here and lie to you and tell you I've been to every single Premier League ground, but I've been to my fair share. I'm not going to do the mental maths now because it's going to take me a while, because I have been to a fair few. And some are very, very good. I will highly praise the likes of Nottingham Forest, for example. I enjoyed their atmosphere, good back and forth between home and away, all good-natured fun. But there are some stadia, some clubs in the Premier League who will try and force an atmosphere by turning up music way too loud to the point of it's actually hurting our ears now. in order to kind of disguise what little impact the home support have on building and generating an atmosphere.
Well, I suppose you mentioned there you've been in favour of the City Ground over in Nottingham, and I suspect it's the old-fashioned grounds which have that brilliant atmosphere, great banter between the home and away fans, and it's probably the more recent grounds which have the need to kind of create an atmosphere, because you've lost that history and you've lost that kind of connection between the fans and the ground. And you've got to try and materialize it out of nothing, really. I mean,
yeah.
I think a big case, wasn't it, Sam, was it in Paris against PSG, and they had one of the fans had a microphone, so every time Newcastle fans started singing, he would boo them out, or there was a decision. I think he's gone.
I'm here.
You're back. Well, he disappeared.
I never left, mate.
Okay. Well, there was a blank screen, but you are back. I was just saying, though, in Paris against PSG, the set of fans that had the microphone for the tannoy, and every time Newcastle fans started singing, they'd boo them out. Every time a decision needed to be made, and I'm pretty sure this happened for the penalty decision at the end, they would boo and try and make it really difficult for the referee. And it doesn't feel good. You know, you want the atmosphere to be a natural one, don't you?
Yeah, and those are always the best ones. And I'll use the example of the reverse fixture, that Newcastle PSG game. Everyone was so banged up for that night. It didn't matter who we played, we would have won that night, because that's how good the atmosphere was. And things like that, when it's organic and natural, can make the world of difference to what happens on the pitch. To pick you up on an earlier point, I don't want to use, because I don't think it's the case, the general rule of thumb that it's just new stadiums. There are plenty old ones that, all right, fine, have been renovated in the past. But for instance, Stamford Bridge, awful, awful, my word. And then as soon as the final whistle goes, they absolutely crank up the volume of, yes, get in the effing bin. Whereas the reality is, it's a bit of a touristy kind of venue now, isn't it? And the atmosphere from the home support is absolutely woeful.
What's the best away ground you've been to then? Because, I mean, I've been to Elland Road a few times. That's always a really feisty atmosphere.
That's a tricky one. I do like Forest, but that's probably because I'm going to be subconsciously biased, because I think of good away days of did we win? I want to say Goodison, but I hate their song with a passion, and the whole woo nonsense, and that's just ugh. Other than that, Everton are actually pretty good. Anfield's desperately quiet. After You'll Never Walk Alone. I think that's so overrated, Anfield. Arsenal's a funny place, but the best one, yeah, maybe Forest. Leeds is good as well. Leeds is good. You are right there.
Where do we stand on, like, pre-match? So obviously it's in James's Park. You have the displays, which are absolutely excellent, and they're fan-led. But at some grounds, you have like fire cannons and what have you, and light shows. I mean, does that fall into the category of trying to create an atmosphere that you would like to get in the bin?
Yeah, I mean, Wolves were the one, wasn't it, where they tried to do a bit of a light show for evening games. And to be fair to Wolves, I don't think they need it. I don't think they need it at Wolves. I mean, all the teams round by me, all the Midlands clubs, they're all strikingly similar, which won't make me very popular around these parts, but they are. The fact of the matter, they all sing the same blooming songs, and it's all a bit samey. But yeah, I don't think they need the light shows. Leicester was one, who obviously are coming back up now next season. They play their music so loud, it is ridiculous. Now, I'm going to sound like a bit of a granddad because of loud music and whatnot. Now, don't get me wrong. Look, I've seen Metallica live, so I don't mind a bit of loud, but it's just so unnecessary. as well. Like Southampton was a bit like that as well. And Leicester and Southampton, their grounds are very samey. One tier all the way around, just a plain basic bowl. It's just like a copy and paste kind of stadium job, them pair. I'm not a fan. It's just trying to forced noise. That's all it is. I don't like it. We did try the didn't we try the fire thing at the start of the season, and then pretty much everyone was like,
"Yeah." The start of this season, did we?
I have a feeling that we tried one game that we had like the.
It doesn't ring a bell. But then maybe the fact that it doesn't ring a bell confirms why someone at Newcastle United, if it did happen, decided to put it in the bin rather quickly.
Yeah, because it's just not necessary whatsoever. I mean, we've got flags. I like the pre-match tunes at St. James's. I know they're not for everyone, and some people want a bit of variety now, but I quite enjoy them still, even after all these years. But
there has been a lot of suggestions, Sam, about potentially before you play a local hero, or maybe even if you get rid of local hero and you play something like ACD Thunderstruck to get the crowd going. Does that play the lines? I mean, the fact, again, like you're playing, for example, we'll go with Hey Jude, you're playing it because you know the fans are going to change the words and sing the song linked to Newcastle United. But then some would say, well, doesn't that cross the line of producing or manufacturing atmosphere, because you're doing something to get that going rather than it becoming natural?
No, I think that there's a difference between that just being part of the day and trying to force something. You do have to have some music, which fans will always get involved in. Hey Jude is a funny one because, yes, it's brilliant. Of course it is. But for me, you hear it a lot with teams from everywhere now. And I just think it's just something at the back of my head that maybe we think, well, yeah, we can be a bit more unique than that.
Because you just said that, you know, you're not against it because it becomes part of the day, but then, you know, those at Chelsea might argue, well, actually, what we're doing, we've done it week in, week out, and now it's part of our day. So when does it become loud noise nonsense and manufacturing an atmosphere? When does it then become part of the routine and part of the day?
When there's no real response. Because the point I made about Chelsea is all the tunes that they're blaring out and they have their own songs and whatnot, there's no response from the crowd. It's just forced on them. So
if everyone sat silently for Hey Jude, that's when it becomes an issue.
I mean, at the end of the day, people do want to have fun and generate an atmosphere. So that's why I'm kind of on the side of kind of allowing Hey Jude.
But I think Newcastle have been guilty of it in one instance this season. I think it might have been after a European game, or it was definitely after a night game. I'm pretty sure it was after the PSG game. And straight away, over the tannoy came the He's From Blyth song. I can't remember what it's actually called. Is it Ultra Beat? Pretty Green Eyes?
Yeah.
That was played straight away at quite a loud volume. I think there was quite a bit of criticism on social media that, you know, the fans wanted to sing the Newcastle version. They didn't need the encouragement from the tannoy because they were going to do it anyway. Dan Burnett scored. He had a stormer. Newcastle, I think, have been guilty of it. Do you agree, or would you argue not so much?
Are you saying that came on immediately after the final whistle?
That came on. And I think a lot of people were like, well, we're there. We know why you've done it, because you want it to then turn into the Dan Byrne song. But the point is, it's loud. I don't think it was deafening, but it was loud enough to drown out what would have then been the fans singing it. And I think the criticism was, well, wait there, we were going to sing it. We didn't need any music because we were going to do it and serenade them anyway. But what you've done is you've actually silenced us by playing it.
I think this is where the waters are muddied, because that something like that on the final whistle, I'm assuming this is a game where Dan Burns had a stormer.
I think it was the PSG at home game, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong. Someone will correct us in the comments, but
it wasn't PSG at home.
No, it was one game where he did very well, and there was a reason. It was potentially then the first game he returned from his broken back. Anyway, it was that.
I don't mind it when it's reactive to kind of. So, for instance, Callum Wilson bags a brace or whatever, and then you play. I don't mind that instead of moving on up or whatever like that by Primal Scream. I don't mind that when it's reactive. I remember as well, like, we used to love the Rafa Benitez one after we'd get a good win here and there. I don't mind that because that's reactive, it's emotive. But yeah, when it's just for the sake of doing it, then yes, I suppose. But yeah, that's where the water is muddied a bit there. It's a fine line, but my point was more of a general one in that, you know, your Chelsea's and Man City and whatnot, they just try and force it by blaring out songs where the home atmosphere is just absolutely grim.
It definitely does seem a very fine line. So I'm going to be interested to see how this argument pans out.
Well, the key word is forced, isn't it? Because you obviously want a brilliant... kind of natural atmosphere, which we do get a lot of the time. Don't get me wrong, we're as guilty as any. There is sometimes the atmosphere is pretty poor at St. James's, but on more often than not, it's fantastic and it's original, it's organic, and that's what makes it so special. But yeah, the kind of forced ones, yeah, it's just. Ugh.
You're not a fan. Well, we'll see how this argument pans out. I'll give you my item this week, and it is players surrounding referees when this decision does or doesn't go their way. Now, this has been a gripe of mine for many, many years, but it just sprung to the front of my mind during Newcastle's 5-1 victory over Sheffield United, and both sets of players were guilty of doing it on Saturday. And the reason it's angered me a little bit more is because you have VAR and you know it's going to get checked. So what are you doing? Why are you surrounding the referee? Why are you potentially going to get yourself a caution when you know whatever you're arguing for or against, it's going to get checked? I mean, if you watch back the highlights of the game against Sheffield United when Anthony Gordon wins the penalty, instantly the Sheffield United fans are around the referee and he just says to them, "It's going to get checked. It's going to get checked." And I just was sitting there thinking, what are they doing? Like, just stand off. It doesn't look good, but you don't need to do it because you have the safety net of it getting checked. And look, we criticised VAR because a lot of decisions are not being the right decisions, but let's give them the benefit of the doubt. They should get decisions correct. It will get checked. And I just think you're risking yourself getting a booking, getting a suspension, and you just look a little bit daft, really. Newcastle players were guilty of doing it as well. When Alex Murphy went down, Bruno went over to the linesman, had a little word, and I was just thinking, if you've managed to escape a booking all this time, and then you've gone and had a chat with a linesman, and you get yourself a lineswoman, and you get yourself a booking, I'm going to be like, oh, really, Bruno? Because again, it got checked, and it got overruled. It's always going to get checked. So now surrounding the players is even more pointless than it was before.
Well, just I'm genuine because I agree with your point 100%, and it's a bugbear of mine, and I'm a bit annoyed I haven't thought of it myself, to be honest. The incident with Alex Murphy you're referring to, did the referee give the penalty or did the lino flag? Because Sean Matthiales, in my opinion, is probably the best lino out there.
I think the referee pointed to the spot first. Then Bruno's probably gone over to her and said, "Well, you didn't flag. You've got to say why you didn't flag." But again, the referee is just saying, "Look, it's going to get checked." So yeah. it's a pointless, chat with it.
Well, it's things like that as well. Oh, I'm doing this in support of your point, which is really irritating me. No, I'm not going to. I will. I will. This is why we can't have mic'd up refs in football, right? Because you are getting players crowding the referee and they will be shouting and swearing and whatnot, which is why you cannot have, and we will never have it in the near future anyway, you will never have mic'd up refs in the Premier League like you do in rugby. For me, it should be captain and culprit who can only approach the referee. But like you say, every major decision is being checked. Whatever you think of VAR, it's still being checked. So there's no need. Yes, it's all in the heat of battle, in the heat of the moment or whatever, but there needs to be a bit of a culture change towards it, doesn't it, really?
It goes back to the respect of officials. And I get what you're saying about micing up referees, because that's something I'd really love to see. Mm-hmm. And I say, just do it. And I get the worry about swearing and the abuse, but what I would hope it would do, it would actually result in that stopping, because they know they're now going to be on mic doing it. And just make the rule where, you know, if the first swear word, you know, I think referees are too lenient in my view. I think if we want to stamp out the swearing and the abuse of officials and set a good example for kids and what have you, then the first time that, you know, a player swears at a referee on the pitch and tells the referee to F off because he's not with the decision, get him booked. Just lay down the law. And there's plenty of other examples within football where you could do that, where I think sometimes if we really want to make a difference, just caution them on the first time it happens in the game. And they'll soon stop. And if we mic them up and say, look, if you're caught here swearing, not only are you going to get caution on the pitch, but then let the FA punish them after the game as well, and they'll soon stop it.
Yeah. I don't disagree with any of that.
Because I would book them all. But like, if you surround the referee, especially now, because VAR, as I say, is a safety net, just book them all. It's the only way it's going to stop. And I agree with you, it should be captain and the player involved, and that should be it. You know, the captain has a responsibility. I mean, they've tried, haven't they, in recent years to get this implemented, and it seemed to work for a little bit, but I think we've just fallen back into how it used to be. I mean, we all remember Patrick Vieira or Roy Keane, you know, Man United and Arsenal of the old days were the main culprits of really going after the referee and trying to intimidate them, which is just, it's not what you want to see at all. I mean, those days, horror days, really.
Yeah, I think those times have changed, although they haven't on the touchline. I mean, you saw Klopp. Was it midweek? Was it the West Ham game or the game before?
It could be any game, Sam. He does it every week.
It was the Everton game. It was the Derby defeat, where instead of focusing on his own team and their own shortcomings, he was just in the ear of the fourth official for pretty much the whole game. It's just so unnecessary. Yeah. It's a culture shift really that's needed. I mean, it'll probably never happen anytime soon because it's just, I mean, it should, but I just don't think it's realistic at the moment, which is pretty sad really when you think about it.
I think if you lay down the law and you're firm with this is what we need. We need referees to be, it's my favourite word, we need them to be consistent. And we need them to...
Well, that's the issue in itself, isn't it?
Well, it is. And we need them to stand up for themselves. And I think if a directive comes where we do say, look, first time you surround a referee with a decision, you're not just going to get a total go away. You're going to get a booking. And I do think you've got to be cruel to be kind in many ways. And I the main point as well, it's just the example it sets youngsters, because that's the most important thing, I think, when it comes to Premier League football. You know, we all want to see our teams win. We all want success. But we've got to remember, you know, there's youngsters watching. And youngsters who play Saturday and play Sunday.
Yeah.
And if they see their heroes and their stars surrounding the referees and swearing and gesturing and raising hands and what have you, you know, they're going to copy that as much as their silly little runner for a penalty or their you know, their celebration. And that's really, really, really crucial that these players need to remember. And I know they're in the heat of the moment. I know there's a lot riding on decisions. And we all get frustrated. We do it in the stands as well. Because let's be honest, Sam, it probably... we have to transfer it to the stands as well. You know, and that's going to be the hardest thing to do. But the point being, the players on the pitch have a responsibility, and I would really love them just to be able to think about that. And again, I know it's so difficult in the heat of the moment to do, but them surrounding referees, effing and blinding, it sets such a bad example, which the majority of youngsters will copy.
Yeah, very impressionable. Yeah, aren't they? It is one of them. I mean, in stands, I don't think you're going to get it at all.
Oh, no, I'm aware of that.
But yeah, no, I mean, it's right. It's just basic common respect at the end of the day, isn't it? He's there to do a job, very difficult job. Yes, there are, concerns about the standard of officiating this season and going forward with VAR. My standpoint on VAR has always been the same, that I'm a big fan of the technology. It's the meat and bones that are controlling and interpreting what happens at where the shortcomings are. But yeah, it's a respect thing. They shouldn't crowd it, especially now, like you say, every major decision being checked. But yeah, it's one of them that I don't think, I think we're so far off it at the moment, which is quite sad, really. But yeah, I don't think in many other sports do you get the kind of authority figure in charge of the match get so much kind of abuse. I can't think of another sport where they're really kind of lambasted. I mean, the only one that I think really comes close is tennis.
But they're quite firm.
Tennis, like, of all things.
If you, I think you get one chance, don't you? If you abuse the umpire, they're quite firm in tennis, aren't they? And I do think that's what's missing from officiating at the top flight in the Premier League. They're not firm enough. They don't dish out punishment. You know, just book them. Just lay down the law. And they will soon stop surrounding you. But also, it's got to fall on captains. I think even Trippier's quite good at it as well. I think Jamal Lascelles is quite good at it, where they do try and police it. And for the most part, they are very good. But, you still have captains and what have you who just don't. And they just kind of allow their players to run amok. I mean, I think Bruno Fernandes is probably a prime example. He's a mouthy so-and-so and doesn't really show the respect that a Kieran Trippier or Jamal Lascelles has for referees. But, it works for him. I think, Sam, that I'm going to win this week. So I'm going to ask you to come back with an argument to why I won't win this week, because your point is a very good one, but you seem to be on the side of me this week.
Yeah, I mean, I am going to yield, but notwithstanding that, I think I did have a few valid points there, and I think that had I have brought this up in a few of your weaker weeks, then it would have got the job done. But yeah, I will yield, because it is something that A, needs to be eradicated from the game, and B, I'm annoyed that I didn't think of it myself.
As easy as that. And if I'd taken it to a vote and I'd lost, I'd be surrounding the voting mechanism just like
you'd be surrounding spoon poles.
I would have done, yes, if I didn't include him last week, actually. So maybe I'm in the bad books. Maybe he'll be surrounding me, asking why. But yeah, look, I think I've said everything I have to say about the surrounding of referees. We don't want to go back to the bad old days of a Patrick Vieira or a Roy Keane.
Or Di Canio.
Di Canio, or when he pushes the referee.
Yeah.
Thankfully, we haven't seen that since. I'm trying to think of like the most outrageous action towards a referee in a Premier League game since then.
I don't think there's been too many in the Premier League, but abroad you often get some nasty incidents occur.
Yeah, but thankfully, I mean, the Premier League seems to have a certain level of respect where obviously it never turns too abusive or too abusive, and it especially doesn't get physical, which is really important. But again, it is just setting the right example, I think, for youngsters, and setting the right example as well for youngsters in the team. Because if they see their captain, going after the referee, then what are they going to think is okay? They're going to think that's perfectly fine.
It takes a big character to stand up to senior players. a big, big character, and not everyone is up to the task. Whether it's about your conduct, or whether it's about performance and attitude, you know, it takes a big, big character for a young player to stand up to the senior figures in the dressing.
I don't know if you saw the clip the other day that was doing the rounds on Twitter, or X as it is now, and it was one of Gattuso, and he was having a massive go at the referee, just totally mouthing off, getting in his face, and it went on and on and on until Paolo Maldini came over. You know, obviously he was captain of AC Milan at the time, and just told him to shut up, move on, and got right in his face. And Gattuso was still going, and then he simmered down because it was Maldini. And it was just that kind of like, that's what you need. You need a player who is respectful, but also he's going to call you out and he's going to stop you crossing that line. And thankfully, I don't think it's too bad at Newcastle. I mean, the penalty on Saturday was unnecessary, the way they surrounded the ref. But I just thought that was a great example of a real captain and a real leader, stand up to his own players as well, but also making sure that players respectful.
Absolutely, but not every squad has a Paolo Maldini. He's one of the best players the world has ever seen. It's one of them. Would Trippier? I mean, this is not a dig at Dan Burn at all, because you know he's fantastic. I love him. But would that have happened? Were Trippier or Lascelles been on the pitch? Obviously, Burn has the armband at the moment. Like you say, Trippier is one that's a bit more aware about these things and will tell his teammates to kind of, you know, go away, leave it out.
Because I do think that was missing slightly in that, what was it, 9-game run of Bruno, who became unbelievably disciplined. But there were a few instances towards the end of the run in, a few, like the last few games, where he was very close. He was still very close to the win. And all I could think was, if there was a Jamal Lascelles or a Kean Trippier on the pitch, they'd be right in there and saying, just back away. Just, you know, keep your trap shut. Whereas, if anything, against Spurs, Dan Burn pretty much encouraged him, didn't he, with Lascelles? So, like, you know, like, I was just, that was the one thing that popped in my head. Like, Dan Burn, love him a bit. It's been fantastic since he's gone to centre back. And what a story, you know, captain in his boy club after being released at whatever age it was. And pushing trolleys around Asda, brilliant. But I did think in that instance where we could do with Kieran back here.
Whilst he's a leader in the dressing room, he's an inexperienced captain, isn't he? I suppose
that's what it comes down. It comes down because experience leads to respect, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Again, it's not a criticism on Burn because it all it worked out lovely in the end. But yeah, it's one of them, like I say, it takes a big character to kind of step up, and like Lascelles did back in the day. I mean, it wasn't to do with conduct, was it? It was to do with performance and attitude when he stood up to the Steve McLaren dressing room and the likes of Sissoko and whatnot, who weren't pulling their weight. It does take a big character to do that. So yeah, it's one of them, but it needs eradicating, and then we can talk about the you know, getting mic'd up referees and whatnot. So hopefully one will lead to the other, but it's one of them where a firmer stance is needed, and they can't be afraid to maybe exacerbate things in dishing out multiple yellow cards. So it could be interesting if were it to come into force. Really,
that's the bottom line. It's just making sure that they know they will get punished for it. And I think as soon as you start doing that, you give a deterrent, they will quickly stop it. I mean, it's like diving still happens. It doesn't happen as often as it once did, though. And it probably wouldn't happen at all if they were consistent in giving out the bookings, because sometimes they don't do that. But that is for another episode. This has been as easy as Newcastle's game against Sheffield United. You started strongly, got the early goal.
You had a horrendous first half, did you?
No, I was talking about, I was complimenting your early start with a good, strong argument.
It was a good, strong argument, and it is something that narks me. But then again, you know, you look after your own, don't you? And we've on the general rule of thumb is we've got it all right in Newcastle, haven't we? So
yes, we certainly have.
Although Dortmund, I mean, we can learn a lot from the continent, and my God, I mean, I watched, I had the unfortunate misery of sitting through, with my wife being Aston Villa, their Conference League second leg against Lille. Oh, Lille were fantastic. The atmosphere inside that stadium and the fans, I thought they were brilliant. And Dortmund, the Yellow Wall, when we went there in November, was just like nothing I've ever seen before. So, I mean, we've still got a bit of a way to go, and we can take some influence from the continent as well.
I'm not surprised it took you 35 minutes to mention Dortmund. I thought that would be...
Well, you weren't in the ground, were you? I don't like to rub it in your face. I was.
So no, I wasn't there. I wasn't in the ground, unfortunately. No, I was in the city centre. Thanks for that. How was Wembley for you, Sam? I know we lost, but...
I thoroughly enjoyed... I was thinking about that the other day, actually, genuinely. When we were in the... London Mags. The Dolphin. Yes, I've been there since as well. We were in the Dolphin and I played my own furrow. I stood up, I raised my hand, and I was the only one to do so. When you asked everyone who should start, Wilson or Isaac, and I was the only person that wanted Isaac to start.
You weren't the only person because I wanted Isaac as well.
Well, you just follow me, don't you? But you look back at that now and you think the form that he's in as well, you just think, what were you all thinking? I'd love to play that game again. I know I've said, I think it was last week or the week before, that the Champions League exit irritates me more than the cup final, but you just look at Man United and you think, how the hell did we let them win that game?
Well, we better not let them get sixth place ahead of us in the form they're in, because they're absolutely dire.
Do you know what? If we finish sixth or seventh, I think that is a fantastic achievement this season. And I can't wait to go to... I mean, I haven't cleared it with the wife yet. I'll probably get one pass out again like I did this season for Dortmund. But, you know, whether we go to CSK, Sofia or Legia Warsaw, or I mean, Villa are going to Olympiacos. I'd love somewhere we can go where I'm not freezing my absolute moobs off.
Getting the shorts out on the beach.
Oh,
sounds wonderful. There's the episode for next season when we are in some sunny beach somewhere watching Newcastle in the Europa Conference, and getting the bin will be Sam's shorts, because I imagine you have some horrendous pattern shorts.
No, I keep it very plain. I'm not really out there with my fashion choices anymore. I dress like a dad.
Are there any nice dress shorts on the Newcastle United Club Shop website in the sale that you've not managed to snap up yet?
No, thankfully.
He's looked though.
Of course I have.
But yes, maybe that will be an episode next season. Hopefully Newcastle in Europe, in some far-flung destinations, something to look forward to. Fingers crossed they managed to get into Europe for next season. This has been episode 11 of Get in the Bin with me, Andrew Musgrove, and Sam Mulner. And I've won, finally. Been many
still
weeks.
Losing the series.
I'm still losing the series. Well, you know, it's just been one of those seasons which I just, fantasy football, our colleague Aaron Stokes, he's a good 400 points ahead of me, which he's absolutely loving. And I've had a diet.
400?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I...
Did you go all in on Sheffield United players or something? What are you doing?
I had a very bad month early on where I got something like 50 points across 4 weeks. It was awful. I'm not really sure what happened. And he's just... I think he spends far too much time. I think he must spend all his time picking his team. So, yeah, he's going to win that one quite easily. But we're going to keep going until I win this. And now if I win this 30, first one to 30 and I get there 30-29, I'll take it.
We should do it when we play Apoel Nicosia in the Conference League.
We'll do a live show.
Yes, in a some kind of lovely kind of poolside.
Like my team bar. Sounds perfect. But this week I am the winner, and getting in the bin is players surrounding referees when decisions have or have not gone their way. Thank you very much for tuning in. It's been an absolute pleasure. Me and Sam will be back next week for episode 12. We look forward to that. Hit subscribe, give a thumbs up, give us a rating and review on the podcast channel. Head over to chroniclelive.co.uk for all the latest Newcastle United news. And if you've got any subjects or topics that you want me and Sam to discuss, drop us an email at the EIBW podcast @reachplc.com. And for me and Sam, we'll see you guys next week.